So hello, Mike just pulled the old bait and switch on you. Sorry. Trust me, I'm not super excited either. Today I get to tell a very hard story. Some of the things I'm going to tell you are incredibly hard for me to talk about. I don't really like doing things like this, but I know it will be for the betterment of myself and maybe could possibly help somebody else. I feel I owe it. This place has given me more than I deserve. There's something about confessing your sins that kind of frees you from them. They are not in the dark anymore. You can't hide from them. I always thought confessing your sins to God was the easy part. He already knew what you did and was always there to forgive. Confessing your sins to your brother, that's rough. They don't have the same understanding God does. Judgment may be different. In reality, there are probably more than a few that are going through the same things, or at least some stage of it. My number's right there. You may not want my help after you hear this, but I might be able to provide some insight of where you're at it in it and how much worse it can get. Mine was a gradual nightmare over almost 10 years. I didn't see it then, I do now. I am stubborn. According to Mike, the most stubborn man he knows. I wear it proudly, kind of. I'm not sure why it took me so long to see that the help I needed was right in front of me. They truly treat you like a family here. They don't care about your crap. We're at least going to test that out today. I'm pretty sure God doesn't want you to be super comfortable and complacent while we are here. I know I'm not comfortable. We only have a very short time here when compared to all eternity. It's really just a blink of an eye. One thing that I really regret in all of this was the time I wasted. Just can't get it back. So I tried to figure out where to start the story. I thought about 20 years ago when I first came to this church would do. I was in my early 20s, single, depressed, and living by myself. A few years before, I had just broken up with my girlfriend of 4 years, or I should say, was broken up with. I was given an ultimatum. Quit smoking pot or she's leaving and grow up. As I said before, I'm stubborn. I chose poorly. Back then, I smoked a lot of pot for what I thought was a good reason, to stay away from meth. When I was 14 years old, I had a friend that was dating a girl whose mom was a dealer. She had no problems with selling it to me. Looking back now, that was kind of messed up. It was everywhere, though. It was the 90s. I lived on the east side of Des Moines. You could have thrown a rock and found it. When I quit, I was 90 pounds, had overdosed several times, and ended up in the hospital. I had also developed a seizure disorder from using and was told it would be permanent. Pot got me away from that, but it just gave me another crutch. I substituted one bad habit for another. I still had seizures after I quit meth. They always happened the same way. A few minutes after I fell asleep, they were grand mal seizures, and by the time it was over, every muscle in my body was exhausted. They told me there was always going to be a chance of me dying from one of them. When I came to, usually it took me about 30 minutes or more to grasp reality again. The best way I can describe it was I felt like I had just died. Everything had an orange hue to it. Coming to and trying to piece back reality was terrifying. Every night I went to bed and I thought I might not wake up. I know this next part sounds crazy, but soon after I started coming to this church, I genuinely asked Jesus to take them away. I never had them again. Try telling your doctor that Jesus healed you. They look at you like you're crazy. I quit taking the zombie medicine that they were and they were worried. Every once in a while, a doctor will look at my chart and ask me about it. They still look at me like I'm nuts. I did that testimony about 20 years ago here. So at the time, I was working pushing a mail cart to principal. I realized that I'm not suited for corporate office work. I stuck out like a sore thumb. I had hair down to the middle of my back. I was a pretty decent guitar player at the time, and this job was just an in-between to being a rock star. To my misguided mind, it was the only chance I had because when I got hooked on meth, I went from being a fairly good student to dropping out my junior year. So I get a call on my radio one day to go pick up the new guy. That's when I met Matt Morgan. Some of you know Matt. He used to be a youth pastor here. But before that, we grudgingly pushed mail carts together. Matt and I had a few things in common, so we started hanging out every once in a while. When he wasn't talking about UFOs, he was talking about God. My thoughts on God back then were, I'm a good person, so I'm good. I didn't come from a church family. All I really knew of God was a few times we went to my friend's church, and they were Pentecostal, so. I don't remember when it got brought up, but Matt started talking about baptism. I said, yeah, I might do it someday. He said, how about now? So I called his bluff, and off we went to meet his pastor, Mike Demestis. Mike dropped everything he was doing and met us at the church. 20 years ago, hippie hair and all, he baptized me. For the next 10 years, my life was drastically changed. I came to church every Sunday. I sat by myself and tried to pay attention. This place became my top priority. Mike and Shannon kind of took a lonely weirdo in. I think I was averaging about 2 to 3 meals a week at their house for a while. Mike became my best friend, and I watched Jonathan and Jacob grow up. My job back then was getting even better. I had started as a plumber after principal and was now making enough money to not have to live paycheck to paycheck. I tithed every week, no matter what, because God said you could test him in that. Things got even better after a few years. I was sober, had been for 10 years. That pretty girl that gave the ultimatum, well, she's sitting over there. We got married. My mom had made a commitment to come to church. She still does. Dale and Sue, Melissa's parents, were coming now. I took on the role of deacon and later an elder here. I had made a decision to learn another trade, starting HVAC classes. The goal was to start my own company. I figured if I knew two trades, I would never have to worry about work. That was way right. After working a couple years at Bell Brothers, I got an incredible opportunity. A man who owned a plumbing, heating, and cooling company that his father and grandfather ran wanted to retire, and he had two daughters that wanted nothing of it. He wanted to work with someone for a couple years and sell it on contract. He'd already tried with another guy, just didn't work out. So the next year and a half or so, I worked for him. We saved and sold everything we could to come up with a down payment. We bought a house in Adel and turned both of our houses into rentals, which was another nightmare. At this point, it's hard not to feel incredibly blessed, especially where I was 10 years prior, but it got better. To me, God had more than proved the tithe test. This next part was not practiced at home with my wife. I left it out intentionally because I knew she would say, you don't need to. It's okay. But I do because it's not okay. Okay. Our first year, we beat bill and sales by about 100,000. It almost doubled that every year to come. We built a shop and hired more people. And that's about all I can say for the good part. The next 10 years were an absolute nightmare that almost took my life, my wife, and my business more than once. Oh, I missed them. I'm sorry. I misplaced them. So before I go into the absolute worst parts of my life, I owe my wife the biggest apology next to God. The person I ultimately turned into was a monster. She didn't sign up for that. I know you've heard it before, but I am truly sorry for the things I've said and done. I didn't even know I could be that. You didn't deserve that, and we're not going back to that ever again. That's all I can say about the good part. The next 10 years were an absolute nightmare that almost took my life, my wife, and my business. Looking back now, I know exactly when that blessing was taken from me. I know what I did to deserve it and how I rationalized it. You see, I thought that this incredible, undoubtable blessing, I was going to be a good steward of it, this incredible gift. But God is a jealous God. He won't share you with what you have now made your God. my job. I did all of this while thinking I was just honoring a gift. It still blows my mind how fast it was taken and how much it got worse and how I just kind of dug in. No one can serve two masters. Either you will hate one and love the other, or you will be devoted to one and despise the other. Matthew 6:24. So before I already did that. Being on the backside of this now feels like I just came out of a war that lasted 10 years. I feel shell-shocked. Nothing is the same. And trying to find my way back to 20 years ago feels almost impossible. I'm still trying to figure that out. So here we go. Hello, my name is Nathan, and it turns out I'm an alcoholic. I never used to be. You heard the things I was into, and for some reason, alcohol was my line. Too many alcoholic family members around me turned me off of it for years. If I drank anything, it was minimal. I did, and you now know, I did many other stupid things, but that wasn't one of them. It wasn't until I took over this company that things slowly started to grow into the worst 10 years of my life. It all started off exciting and terrifying all at the same time, mostly terrifying. Fear ruled me through the next several years. Coming home and having a drink became normal. Not much, just enough to relax. I had asked a guy from Bell Brothers to come with me. I offered part of the company after the contract was over and gave quarterly bonuses based on how we were sitting. He couldn't handle it. All of the extra work wasn't going to work for him, even though I was the one doing all the extra work. I did all of the office work, the estimates, and was still in the field. I'm not sure what he thought it was going to be like, but it was too much. After 8 months, he called in, said he wrecked the work van and was quitting. Come pick up your truck. I was terrified. I actually took over the company while I was still in my last year of school. I wasn't ready as much as I wanted to be, but the offer was there, and I thought I would never get another. So I'm trying to learn how to run a company and get the last parts of my training in HVAC. I kind of went into panic mode. I had to find somebody to help me. Another guy I'd worked with at Bell Brothers, but didn't really know, lived in the town west of me. I called him up, offered him the same deal. He was tired of having to drive into Des Moines every morning and wanted to have more time with his kids, so he wanted to come work with me. I thought he was a good fit. He had a good work ethic. I was a Christian and seemed to like the learning the plumbing side of it. That's when things went crazy. I threw a chunk of money at advertising and couldn't keep up. We ended up hiring two apprentices, Dave and Ryan. Dave rode with me and Ryan rode with Jason. I didn't even know what day it was most days. Drinking had turned into an everyday thing. Weekends were just more of it. The biggest problem I had was not being able to turn my brain off at night so I could go to sleep. What I used to be able to control and put to rest in my mind was now a tornado of constant problems to solve. I didn't drink just to get drunk. I drank to solve one big problem, shutting my brain off so I could sleep. Except the sleep was drunk sleep, and I'm sure anyone who has ever been drunk here knows what I mean. I knew this thing was going to be stressful, but this was a level of stress I didn't even know existed. I didn't know how to handle it. I didn't know who to ask for help. I woke up every morning, hungover and terrified. Every day I got up and said to myself, well, this is going to be the day it all falls apart. Then I went out to meet the guys, put on my fearless face, and pretended to have it all together. The money that came in was something I had never seen before, but we kept struggling to pay the bills. I was so burnt out, I was still trying to do the books, estimates, after hours, and was still in the field. I was completely unorganized, and we were struggling to get bills paid. The guys' paychecks were my highest priority, and everything else was paid with what was left, except there was never enough left. I worked for years without a paycheck to make things right, but we were still coming up short. After about 2.5 years of doing that, I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown. My drinking got worse, so my wife left her job of almost 20 years to help me because we couldn't afford another employee. And I was starting to crack in a bad way. So we lost not only her salary, but our health insurance. The next few years, I just kept spiraling downward. I had made up my mind that this was going to work or I would let it kill me. I had made promises I intended on keeping. At some point, I kind of hoped it would kill me. My blood pressure was through the roof. Looking back at it now, I still can't believe I was so stupid to not understand what I had done. I turned and ran away from the one thing that made my life better. I don't care how much money you make or you don't make, you will never be successful without God in the equation. I wish I didn't have to learn it the hard way. So things were still moving along pretty fast. Sales went up, but money problems were still there. Then we hit our first major punch in the gut. Ryan had been feeling sick off and on through the last few months, and they couldn't figure out what was wrong with him. He called in now and again, but nothing major. The last Friday he was here, he said he felt sick, but he kept on working. He got in sick Monday, and he was dead by Tuesday. If I remember right, they said he had acute myeloid leukemia. He didn't even know it. Later, when I talked to his wife, she said he was wanting her to get his form signed so he could be excused from school he was going to. He thought he was coming back home. He didn't even make it to the helicopter. A couple days later, I had to go get the work van and let him take home. It was the most heartbreaking thing I've ever experienced. They had four kids, all still in school, no life insurance, and had just bought their house. She had also just lost her job because of COVID. They had no money and their families couldn't help her. She was terrified. I felt horrible for her. So he died that year about the beginning of October. I told her I would keep giving her his paycheck until the end of the year. We couldn't afford it, so the money thing on our end just got worse. I asked her if I could set up a GoFundMe for Ryan because no one had done it yet. We raised $14,000 for her. Then I got her set up with a lawyer that we do work for and set her up for an application for survivor's benefits. She got approved and gets a check every month for each kid until they turn 18. They also get to go to college for free. She makes more money now than what I paid Ryan. Things started to get back to normal. We hired another apprentice to work with Jason. My drinking slowly increased because what was working before wasn't cutting it. About a year after Ryan died, I got my next several gut punches. After almost 5 years with me, Jason quit. He said it was because of my drinking. I told him I just drink to go when I go home, not when I'm working. I need to sleep. Like that was going to change his mind. He told me he could smell it on me every morning and just wanted to get out before it all fell apart. He told me that he was going to start his own business and had been setting it up for a while. What could I do? I wished him luck and he left. I remember just sitting there completely numb on what to do. Now it was just me and the two apprentices that weren't ready to go out and fill his spot. What Jason didn't tell me, that we found out later, was he was stealing money. A lot. Which answered some of the money issues. We started calling customers that owed money only to find out they had already paid cash to Jason. When he gave me back his cell phone that I provided, we started getting texts on jobs that he had already set up with my customers. I know this is church, and this is something you shouldn't say at church, but after we had to borrow a substantial amount of money from my wife's 401k to save the company, because we had no other options, I've never wanted to kill someone so much in my entire life. I dreamt about it. This guy at this point was what I thought was a friend. I let him do everything I did, gave him access to my accounts because I trusted him. So not only did I show him how to do it, but I also helped fund it. So now it's just me, Dave, and the new guy. Dave had enough time with me, I had to put him in a truck. About a month after Jason left, my supply house salesman came and paid me a visit. Turns out he knew all about it before I did. Told me that Ryan, the guy who died, was planning on going with Jason and screwing me too. All of the things I did to help his wife, no one said anything. They just let me do it. So now I'm an angry drunk. Things are going about as good as they could, I guess. We couldn't do what we were doing before. It was crippling fear every day because now not only did I think it was going to fall apart, I was watching it happen. Now I had another problem. I was getting very weak. I could barely walk up the stairs with my tools. Jobs that used to take me about an hour were taking me about three. I don't know how I really didn't notice how bad it was, but I was turning yellow. I was jaundiced. I went to the doctor to get some blood work done to get my prescriptions refilled, and they called me back the same day. They told me to go to the hospital. They gave me a bunch of numbers of the results and said it was bad. I didn't go. We had no insurance, and we couldn't afford for me to go to the hospital or at least work. I should have listened to a lot of people, including my wife, my mom, Mike, and Shannon. 2 weeks later, my wife came to church that Sunday, and I stayed home. I was more exhausted than I'd ever been in my life. I had a hard time walking, and it made a few falls down a flight of stairs. My back was black and blue. She came home and tried to get me up with no response. The next thing I remember is getting a smack on the face and was told to get dressed. The ambulance is on the way. They get me to ICU and told me my liver and kidneys were failing, and I would need a liver transplant. They do not do transplants in Des Moines hospitals, so they were going to have to life flight me to Omaha. They told me I was about a day from dying, which I later found out they were lying. They expected me to die. They brought in my family to say goodbye. I was flown to Omaha to their intensive care unit. I couldn't even stand on my own at this point. I had a few days in intensive care and about a week and a half in another unit. After about 4 days, my liver and kidneys started to bounce back. I made a full recovery and do not have to have a liver transplant. Prayer works. I've talked to several doctors and nurses since. When people get to that level, about 97% of them die. I should have. I shouldn't be here talking to you. I certainly don't deserve it. Which brings me to the next very hard thing I have to say. To everyone in this church that prayed for me, thank you. To everyone that donated money, I think what was told to you at the time was it was COVID, which it was only part of the truth. Probably pretty minor compared to the drinking. I didn't want you to know. I also didn't want it to be made public that I was in the hospital because I knew you would help, and I knew I didn't deserve it. Ultimately, it was made public, and you helped. I didn't deserve any of it. So from the bottom of my heart, the weight of that guilt was unbearable. I couldn't look at myself in the mirror anymore. I couldn't make that go away. It tormented me. I had a whole list of other problems too. I wanted to hide in a cave and die. When you have the devil in your head, he just doubles down. I started drinking a few months later. I couldn't make the guilt stop. I ended up going to the end of a fundraiser for me after about 2.5 months out of the hospital. I'm pretty sure it was that week I started drinking again. They wanted me to meet them in a bar to give me money. The guilt was compounded. It didn't take much. I showed up pretty much drunk already. Somewhere in there, I decided I needed to go home. They didn't want me to drive, so they put me in my work truck and told me to sleep it off. They didn't take my keys. The next thing I remember, I was going down I-80 in the rain. I only slightly remember hitting the guardrail and annihilating the passenger side of my brand new work truck I had just bought for Jason. Somehow I made it into a parking lot and passed out, and that's where the sheriff found me. I don't remember anything else until I woke up in the hospital. I did almost $30,000 worth of damage to my truck and walked out without a scratch. Now I had an OWI and all of the fun things that come with that. That was probably the second time I probably should have died. Dave and the new guy had been working together ever since I went to the hospital. By the time I got out and back to work, Dave was pulling his hair out stressed. The day after I wrecked my truck, Dave and the new guy quit. Dave never said anything to me about my drinking, but I know that's why he left. The new guy just wanted out. He wasn't going to work out anyway. So there I was back at square one. I still don't have all my strength from being in the hospital and was drinking pretty heavily again. We put an ad out for a new guy, and after a few interviews, I hired a guy named Ryan. It didn't take him long to figure out what my issue was. I knew the breathalyzer was coming for the work truck, but he had mentioned before that's me smelling like alcohol a few mornings, so I filled him in. I felt miserable constantly, and if that wasn't enough, I somehow developed sciatica. Now I can't even drink myself to sleep. Before I go into the next part, I just want to say this was my bottom. I wasn't even me anymore. I'm not going to make excuses. Because I was there. And I did these things. I really do believe something else was there with me. I spent almost 4 months with the sciatica. 3 months of it were me getting about 2 to 3 hours of sleep a night. That's it. The pain was so bad that by the end of the day, I was limping, and no matter how much I drank, 2 to 3 hours was all I got. I saw things that made me question my sanity. Every night, about 3:30 a.m., I watched shadows circle the ceiling of my bedroom like vultures, waiting for a corpse. I just kept telling myself I was hallucinating because of the booze or lack of sleep, but they showed up at the same time every night. I knew what they were there for. I was ready to go anyway. I started getting through all of the things that I had to do for the OWI. I had a breathalyzer in my work truck, but I figured out by some trial and error exactly how much I could drink after I parked my truck at the end of the day. We fought constantly about my drinking. More than once, I had to call Ryan and make an excuse for him to come in late because I couldn't pass the breathalyzer. I was a mess, and I was so exhausted I hated everything about my life. I hate that these next words even have to come out of my mouth. In the middle of this, and about 3 months with hardly any sleep and sciatica, I did the worst thing I've ever done. Before I got home from work that day, I had stopped and bought a bottle of vodka. I had to sleep. I was losing my mind. My wife was out in the shop doing bark work. I stopped in, told her I was going to try to go to sleep, and went in the house. I drank the whole thing in about 15 minutes. I don't remember what happened next. Everything in before and after that, I at least had bits and pieces. It's like I wasn't even there anymore. The police report filled me in later. There was an argument. I wanted to leave for some reason, and my wife tried to stop me. The cops were called. I grabbed her by the throat. Put her up against the wall. I even remember the cops showing up and about 4 or 5 of them beating me to the ground, but I don't remember putting my hands on her. When I woke up in the jail later, I still didn't remember. That one thing, that was it for me. I was done. I could not and still cannot wrap my brain around what I'd done. I broke my own rules. And I had done something I would never, said I would never do. I wanted to die. I woke up in the jail cell and tried to piece everything together. I didn't find out what I had done until I called my mom. I didn't have my wallet or my cell phone on me, so I couldn't bail myself out. No one would bail me out. They told me if I didn't bail out, it would be about a month and a half before I would see a judge. I went into panic mode. I thought I was going to lose my business. I now had a no-contact order against me, so I couldn't call her to get my debit card. My brother ended up helping me to get my card number, and I managed to talk the bondsman into coming and picking me up. My wife left to stay at her dad's, but I still wasn't allowed to go home. So for a month and a half, I stayed with a retired friend that I used to work at Bell Brothers. I worked on getting everything straightened out. Eventually, the no-contact order was lifted, and I was able to go home. My mom had decided to stay with me. They were worried that I was going to do something stupid. Probably a good idea. My wife and I started going on dates to try to fix the mess I had made. Things were different. I didn't think anything was ever going to be right again. I went to my classes. I did everything I was supposed to do. Towards the end of it, I just kind of gave up. That little voice in my head that reassured me every day that I was done finally won. I kind of had it set in my head that I was going to die. I couldn't shoot myself or slit my wrist, but I sure as hell can drink myself to death. I made a conscious effort to do so. My mom couldn't sit around and watch me do it, so she called the police and my probation officer. The last day of it, I do remember. You see, in Iowa, you can't buy alcohol between 2 and 6 a.m. So when I woke up from failed attempt number one at 5 a.m., I was climbing the walls. The closer it got to 6, the more crazy I got. Eventually, I got in my truck and started driving. I vaguely remember my mom before she left saying the cops were looking for me. So I tried to stay off the main roads. It was raining out really bad. Lots of lightning. As I got closer to where I was going, I thought the lightning had actually hit the truck twice. I had an overwhelming feeling that God was telling me to turn around. I've never seen lightning that close. I knew what he was doing. As I said before, I'm stubborn. Looking back on that now, he could have stopped me, but he didn't. God let me make my own decision, a stupid one. But he was there. I know he was. You get to make any decision you want in life. You also get to live with the consequences. I ended up in the hospital on suicide watch. I spent 5 days there while I waited to get into a treatment center. I called my probation officer and talked him into letting me do an outpatient program so I can go back to work. Work, the one thing that got me where I was at. Evidently, I still didn't understand. I called my mom and told her. She called back and said she talked to my wife, and she said if I go into outpatient, she was signing the divorce papers. So after all this, I had to sit down and make a decision I should have made a long time ago, but was afraid of the consequences. Go into an inpatient program for 35 days and possibly lose my business, or get out and lose my marriage. This time, I chose wisely. And for the first time since I took over the business, I had to let it go. I know that sounds moronically easy, but it was enormous for me. I couldn't let this thing that I had made my God destroy something God himself had put together. The only thing I wanted, if I did this, was for her to come home. It had been 8 months at this point. I did what I said I would do, and so did she. And I think because of that, the business actually survived. We're doing just fine. Just me and her now, but that's okay. It's actually the most peace I've had in my job since I started. Things are good. Looking back on it now, it's a hard story. It does feel like I just came out of a war every time I think about it. But I think it had to happen this way to get me to understand something I otherwise would not have. Got with God always, never without. No double life that looks one way here, but different everywhere else. I think I've always known I was playing two sides. My prayer life was non-existent, and I was different around people who weren't in the church. I think a lot of people fall into this category. So from now on, I'm going to strive to be the same weirdo here as everywhere else. If you can live both lives without having some kind of crisis of conscience, you're in trouble. I got there. And I know God has a bigger problem with that, more people who don't believe at all. Matthew 7:21 through 23 says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father who is in heaven. Many will say to me on that day, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name, and in your name drive out demons, and in your name perform many miracles?' Then I will tell them plainly, 'I never knew you. Away from me, evildoer.'" That scares the hell out of me. I want to meet Jesus someday and hope he says, "I know it was hard, but you got through it. Good job, faithful servant." Not, "Get away from me, weirdo." I'm hoping the next 10 years at least reflects what I've learned from the last 20. I don't have all the answers, but I know something has to change for me. I regret the people I hurt. I regret and am ashamed of the things I've done. I should be dead more than once. So I figure I've got something else he has in mind, even if it's standing up here and telling this humiliating story. That being said, if I can get up here and tell you all of this embarrassing story and come back here every Sunday, none of you have any good excuse to leave this church ever. I've been here 20 years, and after all the ups and downs, at the end of this, I'm just truly grateful for the experience.